And though love sometimes hurts, I still put you first, and we'll make this thing work. But I think we should take it slow. We're just ordinary people. We don't know which way.
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Wednesday, the 7th of August, 2024, 13 minutes past 9 o'clock. Just listening to the music of John Legend, who will, A, be on our program later today at 11 o'clock, which is exciting. And then B, or two, I forgot which I started with, will be an evening with John Legend at SPAC tonight with the Philadelphia Orchestra, a night of songs and stories. And you are really, this is an amazing event. It's a SPAC event, so you can get your picnic stuff ready and pack your baskets and get all gussied up and go out and sit and watch this incredible performer with the Philadelphia Orchestra. And you can find out more about the playlist by going to wamc.org/roundtable, and more about the event by going to spac.org. And that will be the cool stuff. But not the only cool stuff we have today. We have a lot of cool stuff today, and we're very, very excited. I meant to ask this question before we went on the air, but who started this? Whose idea? Was this Teresa?
Teresa.
I am the instigator.
Okay. And the idea was to do what? To bring the gang together.
Bring the gang together.
Okay.
Bring the band back together.
All right.
Fran left the station. She left us.
Not the station. The area.
Just the area.
But you had to drive nearly 2 hours to get here.
I did. I drove over the Berkshires this morning.
Yep.
The Berkshires.
It's once a year in the summertime now, thanks
to
Teresa.
Yeah. We wanted to make sure this is so we can have lunch together, really.
Well, this is great. and let me introduce this fantastic group that we have. Our super group, if you will. First of all, Fran Berman, Stuart Rice Honorary Chair at the University of Massachusetts Amherst College of Information and Computer Sciences, and Faculty Associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Good morning, Fran Berman. How are you?
Good morning. I'm so excited to be here. And do you know what?
What?
Today's my half birthday.
Really? Half birthday? Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Very
I'm
nice.
Like 7 and a half today.
Oh, good for you. Well, that's very exciting. So January? Is January your birthday?
February.
Oh, February. That's right. That's how
She's such a math person.
I know. I was going to say, that's how math works. Teresa Bourgeois is with us, the coordinator of all of this. We couldn't be more thrilled. Public policy and communications expert, Teresa Bourgeois, how are you?
Delighted to be here and, you know, pick this day sort of randomly, but how perfect. How perfect, right? So, delighted to be here with all the audience.
A lot of stars aligning and a lot of cool things going on
in the world.
Yes, so we're very excited to have Teresa here. Vera Acarias-Kelly joins us. Now, she's a Wednesday regular, but we're thrilled to have her. It's still very special to have her here today. Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics. Good morning, Vera. How are you?
Good morning. I'm equally excited because I don't get to see all my radio friends at once, so this is great. Thank you, Teresa.
Jim Ketterer the other day decided that he wants to figure out a party. Like where we just all get together, where we don't have to work, where we just all get together and all the panelists can meet each other and talk to each other.
Oh, that would be great.
And plan the overthrow. And so watch out for that.
Okay.
former EPA regional administrator, professor at Bennington College, president of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. And everyone should know it's not Friday. That's usually when I'm on.
Yes.
We got her to change.
And let the record reflect, we all do whatever Teresa Bourgeois tells us to do.
Yes.
So, which is usually a good ending. So here we are.
This is great. Now, and I just heard a clip of this, so I don't really know whether I'm allowed to talk about this or not. But I'm going to ask about it, which is, Teresa, you were very instrumental in the production of The Gilded Age in Cohoes. This is a HBO Max, or I guess now just Max series, that films in our region is a Julian Fellowes production. You know, the guy behind Downton Abbey. Now in its third season, and they're back in the region, and they're filming, and you were...
I was invited to go on set, yes. So they, season two, they filmed in Cohoes at our beautiful Cohoes Music Hall, and at the Cohoes Mills, and in another neighborhood. We were in three scenes, two episodes. It was magical to see it on season two, episode three and six. Tune in if you want to see beautiful Cohoes. But they are back this year. They're not filming in Cohoes, but they are filming in Troy, back in Troy, in Albany. And for the first time this year, they're in Schenectady. So I was in Troy yesterday, and amazingly, so looking through some of the different places that they were filming, including in Fran's old neighborhood. So
my old neighborhood, yeah. My old house.
Yeah, so.
Oh, wow. See, there you go. Yeah. Yeah. Your house is starring in an episode.
My former house.
Though. Yes, your former house. Yeah. Well, it's that's very cool.
So it's
very exciting.
It was really a fast. It's a reminder. I mean, we really experienced it in Cohoes, but the economic impact of the film industry, you really see it. I mean, the transformation they do to these locations. And then just, I saw a thing on Facebook about the Whistling Kettle, how when they were, you know, some of the key featured actors and actresses were having lunch in the Whistling Kettle, so they were very excited, which is a lovely local shop and coffee shop. And and you see it all through the city. The economic impact of the filming industry is really significant. And just, I think it lifts people's spirits. So I know for Cohoes, it really was a boost economically and just lifting people's
spirits. Well, we have to get more of them to come and do filming here, right? Because,
right.
I mean, if it works out for this series, we might as well try and attract more filmmakers.
Right.
Well,
we need Law and Order. Law and Order Cohoes.
Well, it's interesting. I saw this Janet Planet. And that was filmed around where I live now, you know, in the Pioneer Valley, the Amherst, Northampton area. And it is. And, like, everybody, it does something for the economy. Everybody locally comes and sees it. It's a depiction. So it becomes, I heard something coming over the mountains about Salzburg and the Sound of Music.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, they have, like, I don't know, several hundred thousand people, and millions of people come per year to see all of that. So it really does
that
make a difference
true.
For the economy.
Yeah, it brings in the tourism.
Hills being all alive.
See, the hills are alive.
Well, I think that...
which no Austrian or German has ever heard of, but that's a different story.
They're in Vermont. But Governor Hochul,
to her
credit, they have tax credits that incentivize, and I know that there are groups in the Albany area, Syracuse, Buffalo, who have film offices who help accommodate this.
Yeah.
It really is an economic driver in ways that you don't think about.
I know.
And they're delightful people, by the way.
Show folk are really great people. When you move, when you go down into Albany, the state education building, of how many times that has doubled as the Supreme Court building.
Right.
And it is, it's a gorgeous, obviously, if anyone who knows that building knows just how beautiful and gorgeous it is. But that has been used many, many times as a Supreme Court. And even that area is Washington, D.C.,
the Watergate series.
Which is a lot easier than...
Cheaper.
There's a lot of them.
DC.
And they say, you know, it's much easier and less expensive than filming in New York City, too. Bigger cities. So anyway, thanks for the visit yesterday. It was fun and great to see that kind of economic opportunity here in the region.
We are very happy to have this wonderful group. We have a lot to discuss this morning, and we will get right to it. We welcome you, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And we welcome you. Let us talk about what is happening. Of course, yesterday as we were going on the air, Kamala Harris, the Vice President of the United States, made the announcement that she was choosing Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate, the VP pick. And then just about dinner time in the city of Philadelphia, the wonderful city of Philadelphia where I grew up, they were in the on the campus of Temple University at a wonderful venue, and they had, I believe, 10,000 people. I think two or 3,000 people in an overflow room. And it was the unveiling of this ticket, of the Harris Walls ticket. And it was quite the event. It started off with the guy who didn't get the job, but maybe never really wanted the job. The guy who didn't get the job, Josh Shapiro, who is the governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, speaking in just a fire and brimstone speech, just great, came out. And then a few moments later, it was the turn of Kamala Harris and introducing Tim Walz to the country and to the party faithful, and in a battleground state, and getting ready to go to 7 battleground states over the next, I believe, 5 days, in anticipation of the Democratic convention in Chicago. So, a lot happening. It was a very lively speech, and I will just say that I think from a point of view of all of those in the campaign, I'm sure you all will feel how you all feel. But for the people that were responding yesterday, in the campaign and in the party, said this could not have gone any better. Like, this was what we wanted it to be, and it went off pretty much exactly as planned. And I think anyone who has any, even a brief brush with politics, knows that doesn't happen very often. So, with that set up, I will I'll begin with Judith Ink.
Well, I think we need a new motto for this race. MAGA, make America joyful again.
Yes.
I think we need some like organic cotton hats and t-shirts, because they really are, you know, Kamala Harris on her own was bringing joy to the campaign. And like, who doesn't love Governor Walz? You know, we know the right wing attacks have begun. I think they're not going to land. Remember a couple of years ago, it was like, who do you want to sit down and have a beer with? And and I thought, well, you know, we're not electing our buddy. We're electing a leader. That was kind of the criticism of Al Gore. I would like to say on the record, I would like to sit down and have many beers with Tim Walz. He seems like an incredible person. I mean, I think having the vice president do his bio yesterday was really smart, because most people in America don't know who he is. I really just started paying attention to him last year when there was this beautiful image of him signing the bill providing free breakfast and lunch to children. With all the kids, you know, surrounding him. I mean, that's
spontaneously hugging him.
Yeah, that's right. The ad, right? So I think this is very exciting. We need to brace ourselves for some pretty bizarre attacks. It's already started last night. Trump on Truth Social posted an almost incoherent rant. I still have difficulty really believing that he doesn't drink heavily. I mean, I know he doesn't, but these rants are really bizarre, and many people don't want the media covering everything Trump says and does. I think it's now important that the media just run his words, run his speeches. Mm-hmm. We all had a little bit of a mental break from him, but you know, he's back, and people need to hear his points. Final point is
not just bizarre, but creepy and weird. Let's
dangerous.
Just, yeah,
very dangerous. So, you know, commentators were saying Vice President Harris's first week, oh, that's not going to last. That was just a sugar high. Then we had the second week that went really well. And then we had the Olympics. And now we have Tim Walz as future VP. Then we're going to have the convention. Then it's going to be Labor Day. The rally we saw last night is typically the political rally you see in Philadelphia in late October. We saw this in August, And I think the momentum is just going to continue, but it is going to be a very, very tight race.
My favorite line from last night was, 90 days, we can do that. We can sleep when we're dead.
Right. I love that. We can sleep when we're dead.
That's a good way. And 90 days, it seems like, okay, that's manageable. We can get through that. Vera.
So I wanted to say, I feel like my role today is to speak about the state of Minnesota. Many of you probably don't know, I was an undergraduate student at McAllister, a very international college in St. Paul, Minnesota, and I worked there for years. Huh. So
Practically Canadian.
I'm part Minnesotan, I guess, based on that. And so I know you something betcha. About the economy. I know something about the people of Minnesota. I know the context a little better in terms of the regions. And I also wanted to point out the fact that when Tim Walz was chosen as VP, we will have the very first lieutenant governor, a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe Native American, become a female indigenous governor of the state of Minnesota, which is a very interesting story itself.
Peggy Flanagan.
Peggy Flanagan, my first roommate at McAllister College was Ojibwe Native American. So for me, this is like fascinating to see that particular rise as well, right? So I'll be happy to sort of provide the Minnesota context today.
Can you do the accent?
You can a little bit. And we realized, we found out yesterday, Mark Whitman also hailed for a period of time from the great state of Minnesota. Fran Berman.
Four things I love about this. Well, five if you count the fact that I am in studio with my very, very, very favorite everybody's. Number one, she had to do some political calculus. She had a number of folks. It took 3 weeks, which is a very short amount of time. Some of that was done behind the scenes, as it inevitably was. Some of that was done in public. So we had this kind of like mini vetting thing, and all of the folks were definitely above the bar. She did the political calculus. You know, it's a calculus that's so refined that, you know, I certainly don't understand all of the variables and all of the values to the variables.
Can I show you a picture on the radio?
Yeah, yeah.
Picture on the radio.
Please do.
This is a rally that took place last week in outside of Philadelphia. And
standing room only,
and the two speakers were Josh Shapiro and Gretchen Whitmer. And as you say, that they were going out on the
auditioning
auditioning tour. And the most important thing about this tour or this picture is that it was taken at my high school gymnasium.
Oh my God!
This is where I graduated. This in that cool. room
on that
is
stage.
Where I on that stage is where I graduated. but again, I think it shows two things. One, to your point of the audition, but also the importance of Pennsylvania, not only for Josh Shapiro, but also just in the blue wall, as it were.
Well, and by the way, all of those folks should keep going out. You know, Whitmer should keep going out. Shapiro should keep going out. Taylor Swift should keep going out.
All intend to.
You know, all of them should keep going out.
Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce Springsteen, yeah.
Bruce.
Like, Bruce
fan. Versus
John Legend. John Legend, keep
Kid
going out.
Rock.
Okay, number two. You know, I don't know him, but what I've heard from him, I think will really work. I think he's very down to earth. He's someone that he's funny. He's compelling. I can relate to him as far as I know. He seems to have had a complimentary background, which I think is going to be very, very useful for Harris. So that's great. Number three, one of the things that I've really, really loved is, three and four. Kamala Harris is a boss. Within about five picoseconds, she got enough delegates. She got everybody in the party to come out and say, "You go, girl." Most important to me, she got Gen Z and the millennials. So, you know, we've all been, why did we do this? We've all been so burdened by the bizarreness and the creepiness of this campaign, where, you know, Trump and all these folks come out as big giant bullies. And, you know, we're all kind of cowering. And, you know, they're a cat lady, they're a this. And the kids are going like, yeah, cat ladies for Kamala.
Well,
yeah,
how about
I mean,
Tim Walz has a cat?
Yeah, it's like they've got the memes. They just see it for what it is, which is just weird, creepy stuff. Yeah. And Tim Walz is sort of that vein. So yeah. I think part of the joy is we're just calling it for what it is. You know, it's schoolyard bullying. It's crazy talk. And people are saying that, and, you know, that brings a lot of joy. So I think Walz is great with that.
I think also there seemingly many, many people were making the comparison. But there were a couple of shots yesterday about likening Tim Walz to Tim Kaine, who was the choice of Hillary Clinton when she ran. Mm-hmm. And it is, to me, a very, very different choice. I have nothing against Tim Kaine. He seems very, very nice. But I know more about Tim Walz now and assume that I will remember it forever, unlike that of Tim Kaine. and also, this speaks to Kamala Harris as well, that how they complement one another, how they already in this, and I told the story yesterday, but I heard a couple of other versions of it yesterday during the pre-official announcement, which is in the moments after Biden announced that he was stepping aside, one of the first phone calls that Kamala Harris made in that rash of 100 phone calls was to Tim Walz. And she kept on checking in with him throughout the day, not in looking for a vice presidential candidate, but instead looking to a governor for advice and what she was looking for and what she should do. And apparently the two at that point bonded, and there was a great trust in each other and the information that was given throughout the day and throughout the days after that announcement, is all of a sudden she's on this track to become the Democratic nominee.
Let me say one thing, yes. and then Teresa, I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
You.
It's all great.
Make no mistake about this. This is leadership. Kamala Harris is showing good sense, strategic sense, joy, and leadership in the way she's handling this campaign. She inherited a whole bunch of people who knew what they were doing, but leadership makes all the difference, because these are the same people, many of them, who were in charge of the Biden campaign, which was falling short. She has gotten all of her stakeholders behind her. She's energized the electorate. This is leadership. This is what I want to see in my president. So you go, girl. Okay, Teresa, sorry.
So I think stepping back, yesterday was the anniversary of the signing of the Voting Rights Act 59 years ago, 1965, that guaranteed African Americans the right to vote, made it illegal to impose restrictions on federal, state, local elections that were designed to deny the vote to Black people and other minorities. And I just think that this is an amazing reminder of how far we've come. As I was watching that scene last night and thinking about what a really historic, transformational campaign this is. And in 2026, we're going to celebrate the 250th anniversary of our country, right? Mm-hmm. And this may sound hokey, but I've been thinking, like, who do we want to represent us at that point in history? Like, what we are as a country. And on the stage last night was a perfect, you know, symbol of the kinds of people. I mean, the choice is that Trump is president in that anniversary, or when we go back to the moon, which is also going to happen about the same time. But as we look back at our history and look forward, aren't they the two amazing examples of what we are and what we could become as a country? That's all I kept thinking about last night, of how far we've come, how far we have to go. And then the second thought about is exactly what you said in one way or the other, is since the day that President Biden agreed to step aside, which I still think is incredible in terms of transfer of power, you know, a seceding power for the next generation to accede. She, Kamala Harris, from the get-go, has demonstrated leadership that I don't think people, I know I didn't give her credit for having. I mean, she has unlocked and unleashed this incredible joyful energy. And joyful is the word that keeps coming up, and that is the word for it. And I think by bringing in the Governor Walz, it does help shore up the blue wall, right? Because he will appeal to the whole country, but particularly those key Midwestern states they call the blue ball that you need to win. And he, like she, has a uncanny ability to really strike at the heart of the concerns that many people have about Trump, but do it in a way that is not mean or nasty. You know, they make the point, but then they get to where we're going, but they don't do it in a mean or nasty way. And so, you know, you can object without being objectionable. Right? And that's what they're doing. Yeah. The way that she presents her bio and then just says, I know his type. The I know his type line is masterful. And then it's also his is a me campaign and hers is a we campaign. And yeah. I think that that's really the we campaign. And that leads me to my final point that I think if the election were held today, he would win. I think. I'm not sure, but I think that this is a masterful beginning. But really, it's up to all of us. If this is, you know, what do we want? Who do we want representing our country? And it's now up to us to take all that energy that's been brought together, all those people that have come together, all these groups, and turn that energy into action, which turns into votes.
All right. We have heard the opening statements of our wonderful panel this morning. We will take a break. When we come back, we will return. We welcome your statements and your thoughts and your questions, as always. Panel@WAMC.org, panel@WAMC.org. We will return after this short break.
In my eyes, you are perfect as you are.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Fran Berman, Teresa Bourgeois, Vera Karius-Kelly, and Judith Henke all in the house. And we are more than a little thrilled about that. We welcome your letters, panel@WAMC.org. And let's get the pulse of the people and get some letters, see what they have to say about all of this. Shiloh writes to us and says, TikTok, at least my side of the algorithm, loves Tim Walz.
And it crashed yesterday.
Lots of people are reflecting on how having Walz in the ticket feels like getting the dad parent that they lost to Fox News back. That's great. The current state of the race is being described as cool wine mom versus grill dad versus your racist uncle and creepy cousin.
Oh, I love that. I love that.
Genuine enthusiasm, hope, and joy all around regarding the ticket. There was that moment during the event last night where Tim Walz just turned to Kamala Harris and says, "Thank you for bringing joy back to the campaign." And whether that was a planned line or an unplanned line, it doesn't matter because it just seemed like true. I mean, when was the last time that you haven't? I have my sort of Vulcan fingers looking over my eyes, where my hand in front of my eyes, where you're sort of looking at the TV, just waiting to go, oh God, what's going to happen next? Yeah. Where we didn't have to worry about that as much, or at all.
I thought about it in the signs that they were holding up versus in the Trump campaign, the signs are you're fired. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in the hers is we win, right? Yeah. It's like negative versus positive. It's just...
It feels like the Obama campaign.
No, that's what
all
over
again.
It
does. It has really energy, has... Yeah. Mm-hmm. Much more focused on addressing people's needs and hopeful policy discussions and ideas for how to make things better, not just complaints about what's wrong and how to go backwards and grievances. And right. Yeah, it's a totally different tone.
All
it's about
going
the
forward.
Public good.
Right.
Yeah.
Woo-hoo.
Well, what a concept.
What a concept.
Back to letter. Go ahead.
I just, for anybody listening, if you haven't, look up the video about with Walls and his daughter at the state fair.
His daughter named Hope.
Hope. Oh, yes. His daughter's
She's
named Hope.
She's a breakout star.
She is amazing. Yeah. There are a number of things that he's done with her in the car about putting your phone down, mm-hmm. and the two of them back and forth about how important it is to put your phone down. Just precious. You got to look up both of them. But the one at the state fair.
How old is she? 20.
She's
22, maybe.
Yeah, early 20s.
Okay. She's in college. My favorite line in that is they're going to the state fair, and he's talking about food options.
Yes.
And she says she's a vegetarian, and he says, you can have turkey. And she says, I'm a vegetarian. And he says, well, in Minnesota, turkey is
vegetarian.
I'm the governor. No, you're not. No, it was hysterical. It's just really, it's adorable.
Well, he's a farm country guy. You know,
grew
I mean,
up in
he
Nebraska.
He did grow up in Nebraska, and he lived in southern Minnesota, Mankato, which is vast farm country. Soybean, corn, and turkey is one of the biggest exports.
But let's talk about the mm-hmm. beginning of his career. Mm-hmm. You know, he ran in 2006 and he beat a Republican incumbent in his congressional district. Mm-hmm. As you say, Vera, is very conservative. It's a rural district. And he reflected that. So, mm-hmm. you know, his voting record in Congress is different than his public mm-hmm. record as governor. But what I'm so impressed with is he voted for an important climate change bill involving cap and trade. Many Democrats who did that in tight races then lost, but he went on and won again in 2010, narrowly.
Yep.
And he represented his district. It was not mm-hmm. an easy district. I mean, I think Trump won that district by 15 points.
20.
A lot. And I think it just shows his appeal. And I don't want to end the party prematurely, you know, Trump is going to throw everything he has.
Oh, absolutely.
He's currently ahead in many polls, but I do want to point out there's a new Marist poll of independent voters. 2 weeks ago, Kamala Harris was behind by 12 points, and now she's ahead of Trump by 9 points among independent voters nationally. Mm-hmm. And that was before she selected her running mate.
3 points nationally, according to the NPR Marist poll. And we'll talk about that.
Yeah, and the key thing, though, I think, is keeping an eye on the independents, because Trump's voters are locked in. You know,
it's the same ceiling
and floor. Mm-hmm. The race will be won by who can attract independents in swing states.
Yep.
I don't pay a lot of attention to national polls because the Democrats are going to big win
anything.
In California and hopefully, you know, states like New York.
Mm-hmm.
And so the numbers get skewed because there are so many voters in those states. So it's the swing state polls that we have to really carefully keep our eye on. But she and he are the underdogs. And the thing about Trump is he's not going to just be campaigning hard and campaigning dirty to win. He will be campaigning to keep himself out of jail because he's counting on self-pardoning himself on a number of things. Eventually, these trials are going to happen.
Right.
And I think if he loses his campaign, he most definitely will be serving some jail time, as he should.
I just want to point out that there are a lot of, you know, weird things to come. There are creepy things that are going to work better than the things that are coming now. There are, you know, things that they'll find out in Harris's and Walz's imperfect backgrounds, as we all have, that they're going to, like, magnify like crazy. We should not put on the brakes for anything. We should just, like, step on the gas for the next 90 days, sleep when it's over, be delighted or you know, the feel like, you know, ending it all, depending on what the thing is. There's just no point in a strategy that has us putting on the brakes. We should just keep it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is. I think the bigger problem, though, is I think, you know, Harris and Walz, I mean, compared to Trump and JD, I mean, they're, you know, they're like saint material. I think the problem is going to be the voter suppression and, you know, following what's going on in Georgia. And
oh, that's very
Trump
scary.
Is putting his people in to these boards of elections and mm-hmm. people who won't certify Democratic victories. And so, I mean, if I was the Harris campaign, I actually would put a lot of resources into hiring lawyers
yes.
in every mm-hmm. swing state and not waiting till election day, because the problems are unfolding right mm-hmm. now and mm-hmm. actually maybe a little too late in certain states.
Well, that's an important message for our listeners, though. If for some, you know, way, shape, or form, you can vote, you haven't registered to vote, if you're not going to be here on voting day, you know, do what you need to do. Register to vote, you know, mm-hmm. get an absentee ballot. That's the most important thing you do. Obviously, there's a point of view in this room. Whatever your point of view is, it's really, really, really important that you vote. So go sign up if you haven't.
And encourage
unless you're a Trump voter.
Encourage other people to register to vote too. I mean, that everybody can do something in this campaign, and one of them is this peer-to-peer mm-hmm. discussions. And even if people, you know, I do think I've been listening to a lot of conservative radio, watching Fox News, and even trying last night, because it's a whole different rollout that happened last night on Fox News that they saw, and it's the Swift voting on his record, and it's the, you know, this is going to be a riot, which is they're all going to push hard, which ironically, you know, they're focusing on the Minnesota riots and that blaming him for that, for not bringing in the National Guard fast enough. But okay, they want to talk about riots. Let's talk about January 6th. They want to mm-hmm. let's talk about insurrection in the capital of the United States of America and how Donald Trump again is calling for the release of all of those people who were
convicted
and who were beating police officers. They want to talk about who's on the side of police, but going back to the more positive side, I think it's critical to get out information about Walz's record, and certainly we know, but it needs to be magnified, the foundation of the Harris-Biden record. Mm-hmm. And even yesterday when we had the downturn in the markets, they had their folks all out talking about recession, recession, recession. Actually, it was mm-hmm. Monday. But in fact, it mm-hmm. bounced back yesterday. It's not a recession. You know, they're talking down the economy. So there has to be a counter to those voices. But did you want to hear other voices of the listeners?
I do, but I want to hear your voice one more time, because I know that in the lead up to this, we were talking and you were one of many on the panel, but certainly probably the loudest supporter of Mark Kelly. Mm-hmm. Do you have thoughts on why even in the last round of he didn't advance number one, but number two of what it was that had them go for Walz over Kelly?
Yeah, I do not know. I haven't. I mean, I've read about why not Shapiro, and that seemed pretty obvious to me in terms of his. I think Shapiro did not. Well, again, I think broadly, I think I'm all about moving forward rather than looking back. I don't know why not Kelly.
There was one article in a mm-hmm. maybe Washington Post, a credible source that they. She didn't go with Mark Kelly, who, by the way, I mean, Teresa should have been running his campaign.
I thought he was awesome.
According to reporting, the vice president did not pick Kelly because of two reasons. She was concerned that he was too vocal in calling for Biden to step aside. What a tightrope. And secondly, the White House felt that he didn't. I'm just reporting.
Okay, but he did not call for Biden's upside.
No, he didn't. But he was not sufficiently mm-hmm. publicly loyal to Biden, mm-hmm. according to this report. And the second is the White House did not agree with him on some of his immigration positions. Mm. And then we did have other reporting that labor was displeased because he didn't support an important federal bill.
He did clear mm-hmm. that. But I think it's more why she picked Walz. I think it's mm-hmm. it'd be important to focus on, because I think that some of the things that have been pointed out here about in his own state where he flipped the votes that, you know, had been 20%, 27% Biden, he was able to win in those districts. He's been mm-hmm. able to win in those conservative districts, and also his achievements when he was a member of Congress, the work that he did as chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee in terms of strengthening Veterans Affairs, his military background, his farming background, but really he has demonstrated his ability to reach some of these key voting blocks that are going to be essential mm-hmm. to win. And so, I think that the lead up to yesterday was masterful in the sense of you had people in all key states in the country doing events, just yeah. like the mm-hmm. one that you talked mm-hmm. about in Pennsylvania. Yeah. It was yeah. masterful. So in those media markets and around the country, you had a week of earned media and a week of energizing this base.
Kind of the big reveal, yeah. which is what yeah, Trump yeah. is always like saying, like, next uh-huh. week, next I'm going to do week. This.
But they filled that week, and now they're on the tour, and it's not going to include Georgia because of the unfortunate weather and, you know, concerns for all the people who live in Florida and Georgia and South Carolina, including my brother, who are being drenched with enormous amounts of rain. But so the Georgia event had to be canceled. Mm-hmm. But she's going on the swing state mm-hmm. tour, the both of them, and that will be over the next week, mm-hmm. and that's going to lead up to the convention. So this orchestrated rollout that's really showcasing in key districts, and I think certainly I'm sure Buttigieg will remain out there, and all of these people,
yeah,
Kelly will be.
Well, they want to beat Trump.
Right. They all need to be out there, and we all need to be doing stuff in the background.
There are a couple of, there are a couple of other things that I think are really important about Tim Walz. He has extensive China experience,
yes.
which is very unusual. Mm-hmm. He knows a lot. He spent a year teaching in China, and he's been in his lifetime some 30 times in China. He knows the country quite well. The Chinese are actually somewhat concerned that he is such, you know, an expert on China, and he will pursue some very effective farming policies, which is, of course, China buys enormous amounts of soybean from Minnesota.
Prepare for some manipulative social media.
Well, yes, the Republicans are going to try and attack him on that, but
well,
he's really
an expert
on China, and the Chinese are also thinking this might actually in some way improve the relation if we can sit down and figure out actual policy rather than just focus on ideology and bashing, which is something that obviously has happened extensively under Trump. So it's a vice president with a particular farming-related export expertise with China, which is also very interesting because that is not Harris's expertise. So it's another nice little slice that was added to her profile.
And this on the tariffs and trade issue, mm-hmm. you know, the tariffs are very complicated, and Trump keeps throwing out the tariff word as if it's a good thing. But it has value, but it also can create harm. And I think that unless you know the nuances, and he has experience with the nuances of tariffs and trade.
Absolutely. If you can't, as a farmer, if you can't sell your products to China in Minnesota or the upper Midwest, you're out of business, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, they get competition from Brazil in this country. The ethanol question is very important to the upper Midwest. And so this little aspect to Walz's expertise is helpful.
90 seconds, as many letters as I can shove into that period of time. Here we go. Number one, Fred, I haven't had an opportunity to watch the rally, but I had friends texting and calling me where I was so excited about the speeches. We're in our 60s and 70s and really supported Biden dropping out. I'm sorry to have missed the rally on TV. Radio is a fine option, too, by the way.
It's on C-SPAN. Just
yeah. We are thrilled about this ticket, that from Fred. Then we go to
YouTube, mm-hmm. Fred.
Then we go to Erica. You can sleep when you're dead is a term we used in the Army. Yep. I was a drill sergeant in the early 2000s. All service members will get that. A nice reach out and acknowledgement. Plus, it says, let's get to work. I love it. That from Erica. And one more before we head off. Please mention that when you say this will be a tight race, it's because of the Electoral College. Harris Walz will win by millions mm-hmm. of yeah. votes, as yes. did Hillary Clinton and Al Gore.
If correct. People vote.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think people are motivated now.
Yeah. No. I mean, we got to turn this energy into votes.
And real quick, I am all in with Kamala and her masterful campaign. That said, when we were all wringing our hands wondering who could run in place of Biden, where was Tim? Our Democrats failed us, as it is clear that Mr. Walz is presidential material.
But he, one reason I think he got the nod is he says he doesn't want to run for president. He wants to be supportive mm-hmm. of our first, hopefully, African-American, Indian-American female president.
And she has 3 years of experience as vice president. I mean, she's... Mm-hmm.
We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation. And we welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. News is next.
I don't want to think about it. I want you to love me now. I don't know who's going to kiss you when I'm gone. So I'm going to love you now.
Listening to the music of John Legend, who will be at the Saratoga Performing Arts Center tonight, performing with the Philadelphia Orchestra in a night of songs and stories. John Legend will also be our guest later on in the program in the 11 o'clock hour. If you'd like to find out more information about the event tonight, you can go to SPAC.org. If you'd like to hear more about the music that we've been playing, you can go to WAMC.org/roundtable. Good morning.
SPAC is such a gem, isn't it?
Yeah,
I'm sorry,
great.
I'm interrupting you.
No,
wow.
That's fine.
What a venue.
We're very lucky.
We are so lucky.
We're very, very lucky to have these wonderful artistic venues in our region. Let me just remind everyone that Fran Berman, Teresa Bourgeois, Vera Carius Kelly, and Judith Enk are all with us in studio this morning, and we are very happy and thrilled that they are all here. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Does anybody want to say anything before I move on a little bit?
I do. I want to say one thing, only half facetiously. I would like to point out, and this is a question for the panel, is this progress or is this lack of progress? It took 3 weeks, 3 weeks, for there to be an article in the New York Times about what Kamala is wearing.
Oh.
And, you know, and the article said she wears pantsuits. She looks professional. Good for her, which is nice. But it took 3 weeks. Is that progress or is that lack of progress?
That, I'm sorry, I'm insane. I was incensed by it. In fact, I was on the radio when I saw it. And the day that she, I think it came out the day that she got the number of delegates needed to be the nominee.
That was like the first day.
The day that she reached that number, there was a split screen on the top of the New York Times. On the left side, it was that she got the... In fact, I have the picture on my computer. I sent it around to a couple people and said, is this disgusting or what? Aren't we past this? Right? I was on the...
I was there.
Every break. I was having a fit.
What was on the other side?
Lead story, top of the masthead, about her clothes.
Oh, no.
And what she was wearing.
I thought it took
of the New York
weeks.
Times. It was a lead story about what she was wearing.
No, it took three. It took 3 weeks. It did take 3 weeks from the time that Biden stepped down. Well, not quite 3 weeks, but it was from the time what Teresa's talking about is the day that she actually, when they were doing the count, and she clinched the nomination.
They were doing the virtual count because they had a file by today in Ohio.
Yeah.
But why are we talking about?
I don't think we need to.
Let's not talk about
her
clothes. But
think about the fashion choices with Biden. You got the sunglasses, and with Obama, you got the dad jeans. You didn't get anything else.
I want to talk about her. I'm more concerned about Elon Musk.
I do want to say though, I like her pantsuits.
I like her pantsuits,
but I don't think we need to worry about it. That's the least of what's
going
to be coming.
Well, but what I'm saying is, why is this national?
I'm going to show another picture on the radio, but this is. This is the New York Times.
Oh, my God, we're talking about her clothes.
Those are fancies,
Fran brought it up.
Yeah. sorry, guys.
Kamala Harris is dressing to be president. Okay, that is a finger down the throat right there. With very little time to prepare for the campaign trail, the vice president is sticking to her suits, a political move of its own. And then there are five pictures of her in various pantsuits, and and Vanessa Friedman is the author of this particular article, and I was looking for her.
But
here's my question, Joe: is this
the
progress?
Fashion director.
No.
That it took 3 weeks, or is this lack of progress?
This is just simply a sign of how conservative the United States really is in comparison to a lot of other countries.
Yeah, there are women leaders all over.
And there are women leaders all over. And, you know, really? Yeah. This topic is just ridiculous. To
so
be
let me just let
sorry
me just,
everyone.
So let me just throw this out. I think this is I find this fascinating. But let
oh
me
my
just,
God, I'm going to lose my mind.
Okay. Go ahead, Jen.
No.
Try.
You're right.
No,
right.
I don't find the subject fascinating. I find the fact that we're discussing it fascinating.
That's what I.
Okay, but here's the thing. If this was not on the front page on the split screen, as Teresa illustrated, and was buried in the style section of section L of your Sunday Times.
Next to the wedding announcements.
Would we care as much?
Well, isn't it? I mean, I actually don't know what section it came from. Because
it was on
when
the top
I
of the masthead.
They had it right under
not
the
masthead. Not Teresa's one, but the one I saw. You know, I'm just reading it on my phone, like, mm-hmm. you know, millions of other Americans. So I'm not sure what
but
section it came from.
I would say overall, social media are dominated by marketing campaigns that re-inscribe very conservative positioning for women. Appearance, makeup, judging what you should be wearing or shouldn't be wearing when you're over 40, over 50, haircuts. I mean, it's unbelievable. TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, it is dominated on these kinds of messages to women of all ages.
Well, so a version of the article appeared in print on August 4th in the style section, page 2 of the New York edition, with the headline, "With Every Outfit, Inventing a New Image of a Leader."
Please. Well, that's ridiculous.
But that is different, mm-hmm. I think, than having it blasted on when you log into your New York mm-hmm. Times account mm-hmm. or go to newyorktimes.com, what you saw was exactly what Teresa presented. Mm-hmm. On the left side, the votes have been achieved. On the right side, look at the pantsuits. Yeah.
Like the pantsuit has something to do with the fact that she got the delegates.
I mean, that's the lead story. Well, but so at a time when Donald Trump is at campaign rallies saying that he's going to shut down the Department of Education mm-hmm. and that he is going to cut funding for any school that has a vaccine mandate and a mask mandate.
For any vaccine.
Yeah, all right?
Measles.
Yeah, hello.
Pantsuits. Or pick a topic. Yeah. But, okay, so I picked that one because I'm incensed by it.
Yeah.
Right? But mm-hmm. where is the lead story about the impact of that? Here's a few. Before vaccines, mm-hmm. diphtheria was the most common killer of teenagers. Whooping cough killed 8,000 people, mostly children, every year. Yeah. Polio before vaccines would cause 30,000 people, mostly children, to be paralyzed and kill as many as 1,500 people. I'm just reading some data that I pulled out about this.
Yeah. So this is a mood swing, Joe.
Where's the lead story about the implications of cutting funding mm-hmm. to schools? Uh-huh. I mean, measles, so, everything, it's been eradicated.
Here's the thing.
Pantsuits.
A lot of women really care about policies. A lot of women really are well informed. Healthcare issues, access to lunches in schools, educational policies, environmental issues. Women are increasingly tuned in and they care about public policy decision making. And it is pathetic for major newspapers to focus on clothing.
Right.
And
appearance. We could pick any topic. We could pick environmental. We could look at mm-hmm. look at the comment that Trump
Google
made.
Google antitrust.
Yeah. Well, talk about what Elon Musk is doing and the impact of his control over X, who he can leave in and leave out, which I think is very dangerous. Let's talk about what Trump said at the rally in Atlanta, which not in Atlanta, but when he was at the National Black Journalist Day.
Yeah.
One of the things that hasn't gotten a lot of focus, well, Rachel Maddow did the other night, but we talked about briefly, was him, and you alluded to this earlier, Judith, saying he introduced the four new Board of Elections people in mm-hmm. Georgia by name at his rally mm-hmm. and said, you know, it happened before, but now it's not going to happen again. Basically saying the quiet part out loud about controlling the election results because the Republicans in Georgia last time were the wall against the illegal activity. But now The wall is not there anymore because he has his own people. Okay,
what's
I know
the most
I'm
popular?
Ranting.
What's the most popular exhibit at the American History Museum, the Smithsonian Museum?
The women, the first ladies' gowns.
I have a story about that, but I can't share
okay.
it.
Okay, I can't share it. Okay,
I'm sorry.
If my sister Helen is listening,
I know, but the lead. It was the lead story
you
on
it
a
go.
Historic.
You gotta
day.
Let it go.
I didn't bring it up. Yeah.
Fran, you got to let it go. It's annoying. It's a double standard.
No. I mean, my point for you guys, because look, everybody does their economic calculus, and the media thinks, where am I going to get the most clicks?
Right.
And, you know, fashion is a piece. Okay, fine. Whatever. Sometimes I enjoy reading them myself, full disclosure. But you know, not instead of actual news. But... You know, my question to you is, I actually, answering this question for myself, think it's ever so slightly the amount of progress, because we are really talking about what she represents, we're talking about her background, we're talking about what her views might be about this, that, and the other thing. I hear less discussion about the fact that she's female, about the fact mm-hmm. that she wears, you know, pantsuits or whatever she wears. Mm. I see less of that.
Yeah, I know
and
what you're saying.
So to me, I feel like, I mean, it's not normal the way it should be, but there's a slight amount of progress from the big hole of how women are treated in our society, how leadership from women is treated in our society, the depiction of women in the media, all of that. So that I was just interested in what you guys thought.
Hey, look, says Eileen. She's dressed in a suit. These are the clothing options. Suit, tux, skirt, dress, gown.
Right.
She's dressed in a suit.
Right.
Okay. Then we go to this from Demo, who says... Political discourse has completely descended to calling opponents weird and sofa sexual and losers, but clothing is off limits. That from Demo. And then we go to this from Lisa, who writes, the women on the panel today is kind of a squad. I can relate to this. Thank you for the wonderful discussion today, Joe. You're part of that squad too.
Yes,
he is. Yes, you are. You're the head of the squad.
Honorary.
And an ally. Ally. Get to give him.
Joe is as much of a feminist as all of us. So.
Well, thank you. Lisa, thank you very much for the note. Let's see. Christine says Governor Walz reminds me of our Montana Senator Tester. They are not caricatures of folks, quote unquote. They are real people who really do know how to drive a tractor. They have both been teachers who bring a true ability to care and respect. Rural roots do not mean less intelligent or less capable.
No. Yes.
I'm excited but concerned that he will be seen as folksy instead of a smart, capable, competent leader. Joy, excitement, optimism, and .. reproductive rights.
Yep. So one of the things I wanted to say about both Tester and Walz is that they're very good listeners. And I think when they go out and talk with people and do retail politics, they actually do care what people say. And they want to sort of appreciate different perspectives and views and listen and talk it through with people. That is very different from the shouty approach that... You know, the non-listening, shouting, bullying that happens from the Republican ticket. So I really appreciate that.
And they don't embrace toxic masculinity. That's a plus.
And I think proof of that was the proof of the communication was he really broke through. Look at all the news that was going on, right? Beyond the election news, right? But just this is a historic time. Amazing things are happening all over the world. There's the news system was crowded. Yet he broke through on social media and has a way to connect with people apparently of all, you know, obviously of all ages. He has a very astute communications capacity.
Yeah, and he's good on TV. He's good in interviews. But also, I think he broke through because he sounded so different from our current political climate.
Yes.
It just, he stood out because of this. And I think it's a very effective way in the Midwest in particular, where people really are focused on, you know, pursuing their lives and having a good family life and relying on values. And that is something that I think he can speak to. He has personal experience with. And it's very different from sort of what we often hear, the elitist East and West Coast kind of conversation.
Yeah, that Minnesota nice. Mm. And don't you think people are tired of all the negativity? I think that
might
that, be. I think
definitely.
Part of the reaction.
Yeah.
You know what this reminds me of? Did you guys ever see the movie No?
No.
And I forget, oh my gosh.
I saw Dr. No.
No, and I'm sure our listeners or the internet will tell us, but
N-O or K-N-O-W?
N-O.
Okay.
It was a South American dictatorship, and the international community in this country that Joe will tell us, the South American, the international community made them do a referendum on the dictator. And this is a dictator who had been killing many, many people. And so, you know, you're going to vote yes or you're going to vote no for this guy. And the movie was about the communications campaign for him and how it was full of joy and rainbows and people singing. And it sort of, it wasn't just, yeah, you killed my relatives and now I went here and there. And the movie was beautifully well done and integrated both, you know, the movie that they shot and some of the footage from the real ads. And it's sort of the Harris-Walz thing reminds me of that. It's all full of joy. It's all full of energy. It's all full of, you know, all of this stuff so far. And it's great.
The candidate in the film proposed a lighthearted, optimistic approach that emphasizes abstract concepts like joy to counter fears that voting in a referendum under a notoriously brutal militia junta would be politically meaningless and risky.
And which does it say which country? I've forgotten. I'm sorry.
I think it was. I thought it was Mexico, but I could.
No, it's not Mexico.
It was the Trump administration.
No, it's in South America. Yeah.
So
anyway,
Chilean.
So
okay.
As a Latin Americanist, I would say while that is a joyous film to watch. Venezuela is your example of why that never would work, you know. And Chile at the time under Pinochet, I mean, this is not realistic. You know, dictators aren't overthrown with positive messages. Just saying.
Fran brings up fashion, gets blasted by Teresa.
Oh, I'm going to be fired from the squad.
Fran brings up...
Fired from the squad.
Poor friend.
Fran brings up joy in a Chilean regime, gets blasted by Vera.
Yeah. I didn't mean to blast
it's
you.
Your turn next.
You can watch this film for fun,
I
but it's
bring
not
up
realistic
Elon.
With a dictatorship.
It's partly true, partly not true, perhaps. But
well, Fran is an amazing teacher. Three of us are college professors, and I want to embrace the idea that who doesn't love their high school social studies teacher? I think this part of Walz.
Oh, mine was creepy.
Oh, really? Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Mine was wonderful. She changed my life.
Okay.
Chris Patka at St. Patrick's High School in Catskill, which is now closed. But I think even when he was...
Both your schools are closed.
Yeah, both. I know. I know. That's kind of depressing.
Yeah.
Every school I went to, but college is closed.
I think his bio as a social studies teacher is important. Two other things about when he was a teacher really strikes me. One is in 1999, so remember the year, a student approached him asking if he would be the faculty advisor for the first Gay-Straight Alliance Club in this rural school district.
Yep.
And it was important that the football coach play that role, and he said yes and was very supportive of LGBTQ plus students. And then I'm going to take a turn that
I just want to add one little factoid to that. And that was the year that as the football team, he was bringing the football team to the championship.
Yes.
I mean, it was.
He was busy.
He was, not only was he busy, but there was a lot going on that this was, he had a position in the school and he took it.
Right. And on that sports point, which I often do not comment on, this shows his leadership. He took that football team that had a 0-27 record, meaning they lost every game 3 years prior. He took over as coach. 3 years later, they became the state champions.
Whoa.
That is leadership.
Right.
That is hard to identify. You don't think of that as leadership, but it really is. 0-27, and then 3 years later, they win the state championship.
That's a made-for-TV movie.
One of my favorite lines in the vice president's introduction of him, which
I... Okay, but Vera's not going to like it.
Oh, yeah. Fired from the squad.
No. I thought that the Vice President Harris's remarks were artfully written. But one of the things they said that he saw, as a coach, he saw potential in kids that sometimes they did not even see in themselves. And then they had two of his students available for interviews. I heard at least two of them being interviewed, talking about how he really changed their lives. Mm. And they would have, one of the kids said, I would have never graduated from high school had it not been for Coach, that he had had a difficult home situation, and he guided him through that and inspired him. And you're right, that is the kind of leadership that is needed. And also the understanding to go to the job in the White House with an understanding of the nuances of the challenge in people's lives. You know, there's so much of a lock 'em up theory when kids, I don't know if this kid was court involved, but you know, it's to understand that the complexities in people's lives and how to support them and how to lift people up.
So Teresa, I have a question, which is you're a communications expert, and the communications post-Harris versus the communications pre-Harris are just markedly different. But she has the same team, doesn't she? So what happened?
Well, the interesting thing is that she has the Biden election campaign, and she has really unlocked.
And she added
She just added some Obama people, right? She added a bunch of Obama and other sort of really top-notch people.
But a much different inner circle.
Yes.
Yeah. But they're not in their 80s.
But she
right. Well, that's what I mean.
White.
No, but I'm not going to
risk averse.
But she has really unlocked the energy of this group and is running a much different campaign with a much different focus, a much different message focus. And I don't know who's doing her writing, but whoever it is, they're very good. I know it's quick to denigrate, but that same group of people around Biden were the people who brought us the infrastructure bill. They brought us the
CHIPS
bill. But they brought us all of that. So
And they almost brought us another Donald Trump presidency.
But again, I think we can't ignore the fact that the foundation in which she's going to be able to run on came from the likes of Ron Klain and some of those people around him.
Remember that New York Times story before Biden dropped out, where
the four
guys.
Yeah,
that's when I really got alarmed. That's where he was getting his advice, and they were not sharing some of the polling data. Not to relitigate this, but if not for Nancy Pelosi, we would be looking at
They're bunkered up, and it was really scary.
Yeah.
I'm like, wow, we didn't elect a group of people to build a fence around our president. We elected somebody to represent us, and that was the end. Was the end.
We need to take a break, but I will just end with this letter, which is how our candidates dress, that does matter. One dresses like an overweight elderly man. The other, like a healthy American in her prime. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We will continue our conversation after this BBC break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. And this is fun, isn't it? Fran Berman, Teresa Bourgeois, Vera Karios-Kelly, and Judith Enk all with us this morning. And we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Does anybody want to say anything before I move on to another topic?
This is the best. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for having such a great show.
This is the best. This is, and thank you for caring enough to put the gang together. This is great. Let me go to this story. Before the announcement was made yesterday that Tim Walz would be the vice presidential nominee, Fran emailed me and said, I don't know if we're going to get to the story or not, but I'd love to. And that is about Google. And we didn't get to it yesterday because we mentioned it, but we didn't get it to it yesterday because obviously all hell was breaking loose as we were on the air as the announcement was made about Tim Walz. So how the Google antitrust ruling may influence tech competition. And I would just like to maybe broaden that question out of how it influences us as users as well. And this comes on the heels of this ruling. But nearly a quarter of a century after Microsoft lost a similar case, a judge's decision that Google abused a monopoly in internet search is likely to have major ripple effects. Ripple away, Fran.
Whoa. Well, it affects everybody, so I'll be interested in my fabulous fellow panelists' thoughts, too. But here's what happened. The government brought this suit against Google, antitrust competition. Judge Mehta made a ruling. All is not over. There's going to be some phase where they decide what to do and Google appeals. But here's what happened. Google has been very strategic in their partnerships to ensure that Google is the search engine for a variety of different devices that you use. If you have a smartphone, it's Google. If you have a laptop, it's probably Google. And why does this matter? Well, first of all, if they dominate the search market, the search engine market, what they're doing in order to be successful is collecting massive amounts of your data. That gives them a competitive advantage. Because honestly, you don't want a search engine that doesn't give you very good results. And the more they have of your personal data, not only will they dominate the market, but they'll dominate the market because they provide better results. Because they do this, they're also cutting out competition from the big players. So if you have a smartphone and you use Safari as your browser, behind that Safari is not an Apple search engine. It's not worth it for Apple to create their own search engine. The amount of money that Google gives them to use the Google search engine behind the Safari browser is certainly great. And so if you think about why the big companies are dominating, you think about Google and its search engine, you think about OpenAI and the amount of money they and Microsoft and other people are able to put to the supercomputers and the massive amounts of time it takes to create a ChatGPT that's accurate in some ways and really inaccurate in others. You know, these are sort of big ticket items. And one way we're going to start getting at more competition and really more focus on the public good is to sort of break up the big monopolies. Mm-hmm. So the Google antitrust thing is meaningful. There's a bunch of other things that are meaningful. The AI Act in Europe is meaningful. It couples risk with oversight. The privacy protections from the general data, GDPR. So all of these things are starting to put some reins on tech. We're starting to tame tech and tame tech in the public good. So I wanted to let Joe know in case we wanted to discuss it, because we're getting a little bit away from the Wild West. We aren't exactly civilized yet, But the more we can get away from the Wild West, the better it is for people.
Can I ask two?
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go
I had it. Questions. What are the viable alternatives to Google is one question. Because I worry about the same thing with Twitter or X, whatever it's called. I don't want to be on
Social
Twitter,
media is similar.
But I would like to have a different platform in which to communicate. So what are the alternatives to Google? And then you talked about collecting information. What types of information they're collecting, I think, would be helpful for people to have a better understanding of. And presumably they're selling that information. So, those are my questions.
Some of you might use Bing. Some of you might use DuckDuckGo. There are other search engines around. Google has the massive amount of the market. And Google is better because it's collecting incredible amounts of information about you. So it has a very detailed profile. So
DuckDuckGo advertises that they don't use your information.
Use your information, but they don't sell it to advertisers in the same way. So they're collecting information as well. It's not like they're not collecting information. And it's, in some sense, how specific do you want your search to be? So, Teresa, if all of us type the same term in a search engine, we're going to get really different results.
Ooh,
if we type immigration or gun control, if we type abortion, if we type, anything, Egypt, right? We're all going to get very, very different results.
Will we get an answer to what happened to that $10 million? It may have anyway.
Sorry.
No.
I digress.
But what Google is doing is it's collecting information from you. It's collecting information from applications where cookies are recording your information and they have partnerships. It's buying information. It has an extremely detailed profile. Things you can't even imagine. It probably knows what your health issues are. It probably knows what prescriptions you have. It probably knows your income. It probably knows who your good friends are. I've seen things, Facebook knows when you're going to quit your job or when you're going to break up with your relationship because they're looking at these very, very detailed amounts of information and they're putting it in very, very specific models. So they know a huge amount about each of us, and the more Google knows, the more it has a competitive advantage.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to comment on what Teresa also brought up with social media and Elon Musk and X. We know right now we have this massive problem with Elon Musk getting deeply involved and becoming extremely close to right-wing and neo-Nazi operations in the UK. He has single-handedly reactivated accounts of people that are the British government is trying to silence and curtail because they support hate crimes in the UK. In recent days, you might have noticed there were a lot of attacks.
Right.
I think refugee homes based on completely made up stories that have been circulated on social media, including X. And Elon Musk is in touch with some of the most violent, anti-immigrant, racist people that are operating in the UK. So the British government is trying to detain them and cut off their accounts, but Elon Musk sends them positive and supportive messages. It's the most disturbing thing how somebody who's running a social media campaign can single-handedly go for a frontal assault against the most recently elected British Prime Minister and reactivate an entire neo-Nazi crowd in a country.
Right.
So when you think about that, I am very happy to see these sort of lawsuits emerge on multiple levels that aim to control some of the messages and some of the reach that these people have. Because in the past, we know that Facebook, for example, was used to activate messages about the Rohingya, and a genocide was carried out based on false information on Facebook. So we had the first what's called the Facebook genocide, right? So this is a very disturbing development. We have to break up these companies and put some controls around them, because if not, they will be running our future and they will be determining our politics and mobilize violent crowds to attack in the streets.
Well, there's a philosophical issue that each jurisdiction, each country, or each whatever has to deal with. Is social media like your telephone line, which it's just a conduit from different points of view? You can say anything you like. You can say awful stuff. You can say wonderful stuff. Or is it like a publisher that curates the content? And depending on where that comes out, you can or may not be able to regulate certain things. In the U.S., we can regulate things around hate speech. But, you know, if you all say, you know, I hate Fran's guts and she's a really awful person, I might, you know, we can't regulate that unless you're, like, threatening my life or something like that. And so because we use social media often as a primary source of information, information which is not vetted appropriately. The question is, where does it fall in that sort of philosophical difference, and what can we do about it? So the companies can do something about, but curating information and finding out what's valid and what's not is not an easy thing. But we have really very little anything. It may be that the U.K. has more laws that apply to this.
They do.
But in the U.S., we're kind of stuck.
Well, this whole sort of reification of free speech, I think that's just out of control in this country. Because now everything is considered free speech. You can say the most hateful, heinous things about people and not even identify who you are.
Right.
Send messages that are threatening or emotionally disturbing and create fear in people. This is not productive. This is not helpful to the common good. And we should think very carefully about what our standards are.
But
one minute warning. Go ahead.
Well, I really want to hear from you. Elon Musk owning the X platform. Clearly all in with Trump, giving him $43 million to the Republicans. Like, what are the controls on that? There are none, are there? They're so worried about disinformation campaigns. And between him and Fox, I mean,
the problem is that Twitter, X, has become critical infrastructure. But we're not regulating it. We're not reining it in. We're not governing it in any way that we govern critical infrastructure, the things that we depend on, that we expect to protect the public and focus on the public good. And Elon Musk is just one individual, and he is really making it do what he wants to. If we liked Elon Musk, we might think that's a good thing. But we don't like Elon Musk because he's doing terrible things to people. And so, but the problem is that Twitter is not, X is not considered critical infrastructure, where for many people it is.
We're out of time.
Oh, this has been so great. Thank you, Joe.
This has really been, thank you. This is wonderful to be in your company. Thank you so much for your intellect and your excitement and bringing it to us. I so appreciate it. And we'll have to do it again.
I'd love to. And thank you for creating this platform, which brought us all together and created this friendship.
And you know what? It shows once again, not all women agree on everything all the time.
Imagine that.
We'll be back.
We need to bring our cats.
This.